This is the Clinical Pharmacology Podcast with Nathan Tuescher, where I discuss clinical pharmacology and pharmacometrics topics from the perspective of drug development scientists. Welcome back to the Clinical Pharmacology Podcast. Today I'm going to review the FDA and EMA guidance documents on the evaluation of pharmacokinetics in patients with impaired renal function. I have included links to the two guidance documents in the show notes. The current guidance from the EMA was finalized in 2016, and the guidance from the FDA was updated in 2020. In many respects, the guidance documents are similar, and the same clinical study or analysis can be used for filings in all areas of the world. I will start with a general explanation of why we need to study pharmacokinetics in patients with impaired renal function. This will lead into a discussion of when a study in patients with impaired renal function is needed. I will finish by speaking to the design and conduct of these studies and the analysis of data from the study. The kidneys are a key organ that we cannot live without for very long. One of the primary functions of the kidney is to maintain proper fluid levels in the body through the transport of ions across the nephron. Retention of ions leads to retention of fluid in the body, and elimination of ions leads to the excretion of fluid from the body in the form of urine. Each kidney is comprised of approximately 1 to 2 million nephrons, which are the functional unit of the kidney. Nephrons can act independently. Thus, the overall function of the kidney can vary based on the collective performance of all of the available nephrons. Individuals can live relatively normal lives until they lose about 90% of the kidney functional capacity. That's quite amazing if you think about it. How many devices do you have in your home that function at only 10% of their full capacity? This is also why kidney donors can be living people. You can donate 50% of your functional kidney capacity to another person and still live a relatively normal life. Both age and disease can cause damage to kidneys and reduce their functional capacity. The kidney is also a key organ involved in the elimination of drug products from the body. As drugs are metabolized by the body, they generally become more polar and thus more water-soluble. These more water-soluble molecules are then excreted in the urine by the kidney and eliminated from the body. The amount of parent drug excreted unchanged in the urine represents the fraction of the administered dose excreted or cleared by the kidney. However, metabolites that may or may not have pharmacologic activity can also be cleared by the kidneys. Thus, the fraction of a drug's clearance controlled by the kidney is important when considering treatment of patients with impaired renal function. For these patients, when their renal function is reduced, the ability to eliminate drugs through excretion in the urine is also reduced. Thus, as kidney function decreases, some drugs have longer residence times in the body, and patients may experience higher concentrations for a longer period of time. This can result in adverse effects at lower doses than what would be expected from normal patients. For this reason, many clinical development programs restrict participation in clinical studies to patients with adequate renal function. However, prior to registration, regulatory agencies want information about the impact of renal function on drug exposure so that prescribing physicians can adjust doses properly. Because patients with impaired renal function are often not included in large phase 3 trials that evaluate the safety and efficacy of drug products, we must use other methods and studies to understand the effect of renal impairment on drug exposure. Both the FDA and EMA recommend a dedicated clinical study to evaluate the PK in patients with impaired renal function if the drug is excreted primarily via renal mechanisms. The FDA defines this as a drug with the fraction excreted unchanged in urine of 30% or more for either the parent drug or an active metabolite. In addition, the FDA recommends that biologic drug products with molecular weights less than 69 kilodaltons should also have a dedicated renal impairment study. The EMA describes some scenarios when a dedicated renal impairment study is not necessary. These situations include drugs intended for single or occasional administration, for which prolonged elimination is not a safety problem. Drugs with primary elimination through the lungs. Large proteins like monoclonal antibodies that are not expected to undergo glomerular filtration. Drugs with no systemic absorption like topical ocular or topical dermatologic products. drugs that are contraindicated in patients with renal impairment for other reasons. Drugs that are intended to treat patients with impaired renal function, and thus exposure in those patients are available from other phase 2 or phase 3 studies. For virtually all small molecules, some type of dedicated renal impairment study is likely required. Population PK analyses that include renal function as a covariate are generally insufficient for two reasons. First, the renal function of patients in phase 2 and 3 studies is generally confined to the normal renal function group, or possibly extending into mild impairment group. Thus, there is little or no data available for moderate or severe renal impairment patients, or for patients with end-stage renal disease requiring dialysis. Second, the absence of a covariate effect in the population model does not mean there is no effect. It may mean that there was not enough data in the model to detect the effect. Thus, population PK can be a useful tool for understanding renal effects on PK within treated patients, but it can rarely replace a dedicated renal impairment study for registration and labeling. The purpose of a dedicated study in patients with renal impairment is to evaluate the effect of renal function on drug exposure. Thus, your independent variable is renal function, and your dependent variable is a measure of drug exposure, usually total exposure expressed as AUC, or peak exposure expressed as Cmax. Because the independent variable is difficult to control experimentally, we use a cohort design for these studies. We categorize patients into one of five renal function groups, generally using their glomerular filtration rate expressed in milliliters per minute. These five groups are, first, normal renal function, or the control group, where GFR greater than or equal to 90 mL per minute. Second, mild impairment, defined as GFR greater than or equal to 60 mL per minute and less than 90 mL per minute. Third, moderate impairment, defined as GFR greater than or equal to 30 mL per minute and less than 60 mL per minute. Fourth, severe impairment, which has a slightly different definitions by the FDA and EMA. The EMA defines this as GFR less than 30 mL per minute, but not requiring dialysis. The FDA defines this as GFR less than 30 mL per minute and greater than or equal to 15 mL per minute. And fifth, end-stage renal disease or kidney failure defined by a GFR less than 15 mL per minute and requiring dialysis. When calculating GFR, you can use the estimated GFR value standardized to body surface area, but you have to divide by 1.73 to put it into mils per minute, or you can use the Cockcroft-Gault equation. There are two prevailing study designs that are utilized today to evaluate the impact of renal function on drug exposure. The first is what is called a full range or full study, in which patients across all five groups are enrolled in the study. The second option is a reduced study, in which only patients in most severe impairment groups are enrolled. This reduced study is often done when prior information suggests no effect of reduced renal function on the pharmacokinetics of the drug product. So a reduced study might only include patients in the normal, severe, and end-stage renal disease groups. Patients in the renal impairment study do not have to have the disease or condition that the drug product intends to treat. They can be otherwise healthy volunteers. The sample size should be adequate to detect an effect of plus or minus 40% change in exposure with 80% power. In many cases, this ends up being 6 to 8 subjects per group. Matching patient demographics between the renal impairment groups and the control group is not required, but may be beneficial if there are known demographic variables that impact exposure. All of the studies I have been involved with focus on enrollment of patients with impaired renal function first, and then the control group is the last group of patients to be enrolled in the study. A single dose study is recommended unless the steady state exposure of a drug cannot be predicted from a single dose due to dose or time-dependent pharmacokinetics. If multiple doses are required, you may want to start with a lower starting dose in patients with renal impairment to avoid potentially unsafe levels of the drug. Patients with end-stage renal disease should be administered the drug on a non-dialysis day. Administration on a dialysis day should only be done if the dialysis clearance is needed for your drug. Plasma, serum, or blood samples should be collected at multiple time points for each subject, with the collection extending beyond the standard time window used for healthy subjects. This ensures the ability to capture the longer residence time in patients with reduced renal function. Urine can be collected and analyzed if desired. The preferred method for analyzing pharmacokinetic data from dedicated renal impairment studies is to use non-compartmental analysis to calculate total exposure, or AUC, and peak exposure, or Cmax. Additional variables such as apparent clearance, renal clearance, apparent non-renal clearance, apparent volume distribution, and the terminal elimination half-life can also be calculated. Once these values are calculated for each subject, meaning the AUC and Cmax, the group means are compared using a 2 one-sided tests like a parallel bioequivalence study. This generates a point estimate and a 90% confidence interval of the ratio of each renal impairment group relative to the control group with normal renal function. But instead of making a determination of bioequivalence, you use the point estimates to either confirm that no dose adjustments are necessary or define the dose reduction recommended to ensure that the exposure is similar to that of normal subjects. For example, let's say that the point estimate for the severe renal impairment group relative to the control group was 3.1, and for the moderate group it was 1.9, and for the mild group it was 1.1. Those results would suggest if the dose for the normal renal function group is 100 milligrams, patients with severe renal impairment would need a dose of 33 milligrams, about one-third. Patients with moderate impairment would need a 50 milligram dose. And patients with mild impairment would not need a dose reduction. The level at which a dose adjustment is necessary will depend on the safety margin available for your drug based on the exposure information from your phase 2 and 3 program. In many cases, you may have a very wide range of exposure values that are reasonably safe, allowing you to avoid dose adjustments in patients with renal impairment even when the relative exposure rises. One last note is that there are some reports of using physiologic-based pharmacokinetic models, or PBPK models, to assess the impact of renal function on drug pharmacokinetics. However, there are no clear regulatory standards for substituting PBPK simulations for a dedicated renal impairment study. Today's episode was relatively short because the scientific approach for evaluating the effect of renal impairment on pharmacokinetics is well established. In over 20 years, very little has changed in the approach, analysis, or interpretation of these results. To review, the kidney is a key organ involved in drug elimination, and reduced kidney function can cause decreased drug clearance and thus elevated drug levels that can lead to safety concerns and toxicity. For most small molecules and peptides, a dedicated renal impairment study is required. The renal impairment study will include a control group of patients with normal renal function and separate groups of patients with mild, moderate, and severe renal impairment. A comparison of the AUC and Cmax between the control and impaired groups is then used to determine which patient groups may need a dose reduction and the magnitude of that reduction. For those of you attending the AAPS meeting, I am here in Orlando and would be happy to meet or chat with you. Feel free to send me a message in the AAPS meeting app or send me an email to nathan@tushersolutions.com. For more information, please connect with me on LinkedIn, send me an email to nathan@tushersolutions.com, or sign up for my newsletter at tushersolutions.com/newsletter. The newsletter is a copy of the show notes sent to your email each time an episode is released. Also, please subscribe to this podcast wherever you listen to the show. Thank you.